the worst of the worst, the people that are really smoking the seeds and stems of the bag of dope of nothingness, the people who are picking little bits of peanuts out of squirrel shit, are the shit coiners. The people with absolutely no hope. They're the heroin addicts and the overdosers of the fake crypto environment of nothingness, just out there affinity scamming to the end. There's no hope for the shitcoiner. There's no way to bring them back now from the abyss. We've tried. We've built the ark, but they insist on drowning. We've built perfect money, but they insist on losing. And there's nothing we can do, Tatum, at this point. We should not feel bad for them. We should not feel bad for ourselves, because we have to leave them behind. Leave them behind to rot in their own stinking shitcoinery to death. And let's not be cruel about it. Let them top themselves right away. Now.
Welcome to the Bitcoin panel. That's how we start things out. Holy cow. Of course, that was from Tatum's show. Hold on, let me remove that. Hey, guys, how you doing?
What's up?
Good.
What's going on?
Yeah, so welcome, everybody, to the Bitcoin panel. We hang out every week and a bunch of awesome Bitcoiners, and we talk shop, and we just hang out and have fun. So if you're here, say hi. We got Paul showing up early saying, pound that like button. Paul is all over the chat. Thank you, Paul. It's always great when you have at least one person in chat, and Paul is the guy to have. If you ever have a chat, invite that man. All right. So how's your week going? Look, I think we're all have good. Literally several feet of snow around us right now, right?
Yep. Yeah, we got about a foot and a half, I think, overnight.
Yeah, same here.
I shoveled about 8 or 10 inches yesterday, and I think there's another 8 or 10 inches there today. It's like, excuse me, I already threw out my back yesterday. Nothing.
Yeah, this is my first time shoveling snow, and I'm not built for all this, man. You know, it's a little different, but I do like the snow though. It was kind of fun to see. Yeah. You know, so much.
It's the spring snow. It's always wet and heavy.
In yeah, December, that was the main thing.
It's fine. It's like, oh, whatever. Just move it.
This is guys. But before we look, we're in trouble, guys. Look at the chart, okay?
Bitcoin died again.
Damn. Oh, it's over. Pack your bags.
All right. I appreciate you having me on, but I'm gonna head out.
Yeah. Anyway, we don't need to look at the chart the whole time. I like having the chart up. Oh wait, Paul says he got 2 inches in Durango. Okay, not bad. Nice. Work on it, Paul. You could do better. Johnny's watching from work. Safe to Johnny B. Wait, is that your friend?
Yeah. Oh. What's up, Johnny B?
Johnny.
Hey, Johnny.
Happy Friday, everybody. So yeah, what's going on this week? Well, we had 4 days this week when we literally made all-time highs 4 days in a row. I mean, can you guys remember that ever happening?
First day, yeah, that's crazy.
I'm sure it did.
I was just looking. It looks like right now we're sitting at all-time high. 73,777 is current all-time high.
Yeah. How are you guys enjoying this run? Are you as excited as you were last time, or how are you feeling? Nick, why don't you start?
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting. I think I won't be really excited till we break through 100K. That's when I think, I don't know. I think there's a psychological barrier there, and I think that's when a lot of the FOMO will really start to kick in.
That makes sense.
And I think it's just going to go up from there, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah. AC, how about you? Feeling it?
Yeah, you know, kind of on the same boat. We've talked about this before. I think the price is interesting, exciting, but for me at least, the energy isn't quite there yet. I think that retail hasn't woken up to it. They're either not paying attention, they're asleep at the wheel, or they're just trying to make ends meet. And so for me, it's the energy is when I start to really, you know, kind of feel the bull run, and we're not there yet.
Yeah, Tatum.
Yeah, I definitely feeling good, and it's fun, but it is very different. I don't know why. Like, I remember last time we were running up to 69,000 at that, when that was the all-time high, it was like every, like, I was just serially refreshing Twitter and everyone was playing Pump It Up and stuff. And it's just not the same, which, I mean, we're winning, but something's different. I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily. I definitely don't think it's a bad thing. I think that that bear market did some stuff in a good way, I think, and kept people humble.
Yeah, I was thinking it may be the, and this is probably not correct, but when we actually hit our all-time high, I forget if it was like the middle of the night or the morning, and then we just wicked above it, and like, so what I'm saying is that moment when we broke the all-time high was not momentous. It was just like, oh, we broke all-time high, but now we're back below. And I don't know. You think that had anything
also,
to do with
it? Maybe so, but also I think that in the same sense, when we hit 69,000, if you look on the entire chart, I think I brought this up, it's just that little wick. But this one was like a gradual, like, it just started climbing pretty gradually. And so, like, the monthly candle is, like, extremely thick. There's not too much overhead on that retrace. And I think it was just different because, like, it wasn't, like, a quick little, like, hey, surprise, buddy, 69,000, new all-time high. Awesome. It was kind of like a wow, are we going to do it today? Are we going to do it today? Are we going to do it today? So it's kind of like I'm just going to back off a little bit and kind of chill out.
I was going to say, I think it's, I mean, it's an interesting time because we haven't seen an all-time high prior to the halving event like this. And I really expect, I don't think it's, I mean, we're in the beginning portion of a bull market. I don't think we've really seen it take off yet. I mean, it's like nice to know when I bought the top last time, I'm like, okay, I'm ahead on that. But like, I don't think we've really seen it start to take off yet.
Yeah, I think this cycle we're forgetting that. I think in previous cycles, there was the halving, and then 6 months later, approximately, we broke the all-time high, and then we started going up. So we're like, what, 9 months early this time?
Yeah, I think it's going to be we're going to have a crazy next like 4 months, in my opinion, because I think we're going to kind of precede the post-halving historical cycle uprun, because we're already seeing the implications of what that supply, that actual hard cap supply shock, is going to look like. And so starting, you know, close to April 20th, that it's going to be twice as hard to meet demands that Bitcoin cannot meet right now as far as supply goes. Is that a bad thing? Usually when you can't meet demands due to supply, that's bad. It's freaking awesome right now for people who front ran Wall Street for the past 14, 15 years. So I think that it's all going to happen a lot quicker than we expect. And all of your historical models are going to be demolished.
Yep. Have you seen Rational Roots HODL model?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And in
the HODL model, the
his HODL model S.
His HODL model S. He was saying he wants to readjust it to have like the HODL model Super S curve.
Yeah, yeah. He was recently on Peter McCormack's show, and he kind of updated both of those. And then I forget if it was Rational Root or Checkmate also talked about their left adjusted model, which basically, instead of aligning the halvings, aligned the ETF date with previous halvings to show that we're on a different trajectory this time. But there's still some, you know, it's not, history is not going to repeat, but it's going to echo. So there's a little bit of similarities there if you do a left adjusted. But both of those, I mean, I really appreciate all the on-chain analysis both of those guys do, and the amount of time that they put in and the content they put out for free is definitely great to see, especially when they both line up, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing he mentioned in that interview, I believe he mentioned it, which is a phenomenal interview. I covered it this week. He said that the spot ETFs being approved had the same effect on Bitcoin as a halving. Mm-hmm. And so now he says we have a halving, and then 3 months later, we're going to have another halving. And so this is very interesting, right? We haven't seen this.
Yeah, it's like Tatum said, all of our models are going to be destroyed. I don't think anyone is ready. I don't think we're bullish enough. I think we're all going to be surprised 2 years from now where we're standing or where we're sitting, whether it's on an island or the top of the mountain. It's going to be a great ride.
Why not both?
Yeah. Yeah, just last cycle, I remember, was kind of a disappointment, the fact that we only went to 69, because everyone was expecting at least 100. And so, like, this cycle, it's like we're all, I mean, I think we're justifiably optimistic. I really do. But at the same time, though, do you think the market can let us down again or something? Maybe we only go to like 212,000 and people feel let down, Tatum?
You know, I'm curious to see what comes up that is going to drive that artificial price inflation. Because last cycle was the cycle for lending and leverage and paper Bitcoin. And I think that a lot of that affected artificial price discovery, I guess. And when you're building that on top of a essentially false market, it's going to cripple down immediately. There are going to be products and stuff that show up here, I think, in this cycle that will do that to an extent. However, it is not going to be as drastic, I think, because we now are looking at mainly supply and demand. That's the main driver I'm looking at right now and what I think is happening, because, you know, the freaking ETFs continue to eat up tens of thousands of Bitcoin every single day. And the Grayscale outflows are going to stop. There is an endpoint to that. There is no endpoint, knowingly. There's going to have to be an endpoint at some point for other ETF inflows, but there is a very hard stop with Grayscale. So the demand is going to get higher, and the supply is going to get lower. So that's the main driver, I think, in my opinion, that is kind of getting priced in right now. But anything can happen, and I'm expecting, you know, I also expect that the drawdown from this cycle is going to be much more intense. However, we're going to see a lot higher lows, but you're going to have – it's still going to feel pretty shitty whenever, you know, we go from 500,000 down to 200,000 or something like that. But then – and that's just arbitrary numbers, which I think might could happen. But – you're going to zoom out and think like, oh, dude, I was stacking my ass off at $15,000. Like, chill out. So we'll see what happens there.
Right. Yeah. Actually, I think I'm going to disagree with you here, Tatum. I think based on the ETF and specifically on rebalancers, I think that the downturn is not going to be as bad as we've seen in the past. I don't think we're going to see another 70 or 80% drop. Because the rebalancers are going to buy in to meet their portfolio allocation percentage along the way down. And I think that's going to have a dampening effect on that drop, you know, whenever that is, whether that's 2026 or we have a super cycle, whatever. But whenever that downturn happens, I think it's going to be dampened quite a bit by the ETFs.
Yeah. And I think to kind of add on to that, I think the narrative has changed a bit too about Bitcoin being a risk asset. And I think there's been a bit of a shift in mentality about it's actually a risk off asset, like for the long term. And so I think we're going to start seeing, I mean, the suits are here. We have a lot more institutional investment on that front. The ETFs, I mean, I'm kind of waiting for some additional nation state adoption as well. I mean,
No, sorry. Sorry to cut you off. And you know, that's a good point too. Mr. 100, You know, there's a bunch of speculation floating around with Mr. 100 on, you know, is that a billionaire that's stacking like crazy? Is that a nation state that hasn't, you know, disclosed that they've been stacking? I think that that's an interesting story to me. Not only because there's a massive amount of money, I don't remember the exact number, but a massive amount of money in the number of Bitcoin per day, at least 100 per day since November. I think you're 100% right. I would be surprised if there aren't already nation states that have seen the writing on the wall and they're trying to posture and position themselves to be prepared for whatever it is, a global recession, financial crisis, you name it. So yeah, I'm on the same page there, Nick.
Yeah. And I mean, I think at that point, like once the cat's out of the bag, whoever Mr. 100 is, I mean, and we see additional demand, I agree. I don't know if the drawdowns that we are used to seeing, you know, 60, 70, 80%. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball.
So. Well, yeah. And that plays into the prisoner's dilemma too, right? Like I'm surprised that with El Salvador adopting it as a national currency, we haven't seen others. I mean, we're all familiar with the prisoner's dilemma and, you know, country A adopts, country B does not, country B loses, so on and so forth between that quad chart. So I'm surprised that other countries, nation states haven't already adopted it. And I think once, you know, we figure out or the community figures out who Mr. 100 is, and if it comes to be that it is a nation state, I think that only, you know, kind of ties other nation states' hands into also playing the game. Otherwise, they lose.
I actually agree a bit with all you guys, because one way there could be an 80% drop in the next bear run is if we go up way higher than we thought we might go. For instance, let's say we go over a million, right? I think there's a bunch of people online now saying how $1 million, even this year, $1 million Bitcoin is possible. But probably definitely
now said that. I mean, it's so hard to predict. I mean, we've just, you know, the market right now is so much different than anything we've seen before.
I guess my point is that if it's a blow off top high enough, then we can come 80% down and still be very high, right? Yeah.
I think that the gradual climb is going to cushion that blow a little bit. I mean, any scenario is possible at this point. It's going crazy. And I think that we're in for some crazy bullish headlines that we're going to see that we could not expect. Like we're talking about nation states and stuff like that. If I were to see, you know, another nation state tomorrow announce that they're adopting Bitcoin as legal tender, I'd be excited, but not too surprised. I think there's stuff that's going to happen very soon that we're not even going to expect. To what magnitude, I have no idea. But I mean, I'll be honest, I was a little surprised that MicroStrategy doubled down real quick with those convertible senior notes. Like, dude is more all in than you can be all in. Like, it's crazy. And I don't know if that's going to slow down either. It's like Saylor and Larry are just kind of like playing volleyball, seeing who can buy the most at the shortest amount of time.
Yeah, that was wild to see him totally double down. I mean, everything had just cleared for the previous purchase, and then it was less than a week later, and he's like, "Hey,
bam,
$500 million more. Let's do this."
Yeah.
So I have a question about this over the counter buying stuff, because is like, okay, if I want to buy, I can go to an exchange and I can buy my little bit of Bitcoin that I buy, right? And that's what most people do, most normies do. But the bigger people, the bigger customers, they contact Coinbase, like they call up a secret Coinbase number and they're like, hey, I need to buy a lot. And so they call that over the counter, is that correct? And is it just like a deal between them and Coinbase? Like Coinbase is like, we'll sell it for 71,000. Or how does that? Do you guys
it
know how
depends.
That works?
There's
a lot
several different ways that you can OTC trade.
Yeah, and actually, it's available to retail also on, you know, specific service providers like Swan. I think has an OTC desk available. I'm not sure if River does. Unchained does. So it's not just for, you know, the whales and institutions. It's something that's available to retail also.
And also, that's a good way on the retail side of things for smaller amounts to get KYC-free Bitcoin with, like, HODL, RoboSats, anything like that. And that's also how some people have made additional money on top of what they have, because if you're trying, if you're aiming to buy a KYC-free Bitcoin, you're going to pay a premium on that. And there were rumors surrounding that. I never got any confirmation on this, but there were rumors whenever the ETFs were approved that some of them were contacting some OG Bitcoiners with, you know, offering 5% premium on some of their coins as well. So it's crazy because, like, you have all this analysis with what we do know, but there's so much more that we don't know that's going on. But it's crazy because we know more than we do in traditional markets because it's all open. So, I mean, you can see where those coins are. You don't know who's being contacted over the phone or Telegram or anything like that, asking, like, hey, I'll buy these for $80K a coin. Like, it's super weird. It's super exciting. It's super fun. Shadowy super coder shit.
Yeah, and I think that despite the fact that you couldn't confirm that, I think there's truth to that. And I forget who did the analysis. Again, it was either Rational Root or it was Checkmate, and they were looking at long-term holders. And, you know, the amount of long-term holders that have sold into the appreciation, pure speculation, I wouldn't be surprised if those are long-term holders greater than 155 days who sold to an OTC and the OTC ended up selling to one of the ETFs. To me, it just makes so much sense, especially if, you know, they're getting a premium on their Bitcoin at the time.
Yeah.
That's interesting. All right. So I want to switch the subject because I think all of you are, like, especially you, Tatum, you guys are into mining Bitcoin and all that stuff. So let's...
I just want to let you know that my laptop is literally sitting on an S19J Pro right now. that's how I have the angle.
So wait, then it's not... The miner's not running then, right? Because it would
be... Oh, no, I just got this thing... No, I'm just kidding. It's not running.
Okay. So let's say I want to get in... I want to get into mining, but not for real. I see these little units. They're like little mining unit. You can buy them for like a few $100 and then I don't even know how you plug them in or how they work, but they're not that powerful. Are those types of units even worth bothering with? Can I actually mine Bitcoin that way and have it be worth it?
So I have a theory on this. I think the one that you're talking about is probably the BitX. Which I think is super cool. Also, by the way, my internet in this room for some reason keeps cutting in and out. If I drop for like 5 seconds, I promise I'll come back. It happens. But from my understanding, I think that they're using the S21 chip. And what I think is going to happen is this is like doomsday scenario, but I think that it's very possible. I think that here's a truth bomb. No one wants to hear this. No one wants to agree with it. Mining is centralized. It really is. It does pose a danger to the network. I don't think that it will happen, but there are possibilities that the centralization of mining and mining nodes could do something. Look back at the reorg for the core 0.8 chain. But what I think is going to happen is that governments are going to embrace mining, which I think has very little possibility, or they're going to try to attack mining, or some combination of both, where essentially they're going to overtake the infrastructure that certain countries have with mining based on regulations. And what I think that's going to result in is that these little, you know, couple gigahash, terahash machines that you have running at, you know, little to no wattage pool, that's going to be the entire network eventually, I think. I mean, I say that. I don't think that, you know, the entire network is going to...
Frozen.
I think I dropped right there. Yeah, I dropped right there. I think I felt it coming. I don't think the entire network is going to be single chip miners by any means. But pools are going to be dismantled, I think. And then Stratum V2 is going to come along at some point, which is going to make pools even more decentralized. But the fact is... What I'm trying to say is that you're going to end up having more of a chance with one of these miners than you would previously, because there's going to be less over-the-counter out of band transactions. There's going to be less dominance with pools. Like, I mean, Ant Pool, Foundry, like F2 Pool, those are all the same pool. Like, and there's a bunch of stuff going on the side and things like that. It's kind of a gimmick lottery ticket right now. In the future, I think that it could be something that could win a block, maybe. It's a crazy ass theory, but it might be crazy enough to be true. I mean, none of these other theories about Bitcoin over the past couple of months have been true. It's just been crazy things left and right. So
yeah, I honestly don't think that's crazy at all. I mean, if you look at the current state of the mining market, at least in the United States, I mean, I know the EIA, not proposal, but it got shut down. So basically, miners won't have to self-report at this point. But now the current Biden administration, the potato in chief, they want to impose that 30% tax, or at least
it's just a loophole to get the same thing that they wanted.
Right. So if you start pushing people out of the mining industry, there's going to be a lot of extra miners available for consumer purchase. I mean, I don't know. They wouldn't be able to go through and maybe they could start monitoring everybody's electricity consumption through a smart meter. Don't get me going on that rabbit hole. But, you know, And I agree. I think different, you know, changes in protocols with, you know, Stratum V2. There's a lot of opportunity out there.
And is this that small one you were talking about, Tatum?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it looks like that's something. Oh, look like at that. There you go. Yeah.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yes, there is a chance.
The lottery ticket of Bitcoin miners.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it is the most difficult it's ever been to get a block with one of those at the moment.
Oh, I know.
But, you know, it's crazy. Difficulty adjustment is going berserk.
So, but if I bought one of these for $220 and I plug it in, how much electricity is that going to cost me for a month, let's say? Do you have any idea?
It should have it on the website. I think it's okay. An 11-watt power draw. And you can go on to any of, like, the mining calculators. It's going to be probably not even noticeable on your electricity bill.
Okay.
Yeah. It's probably like plugging in a, I don't even know.
Like fan. Turning on a light or something.
Less than a light. Yep.
Less than a light.
Oh. Yeah. And at work, we have a lot of us went in and bought some nerd miners as well, which are much less powerful than that. But it's still just kind of like a little lottery ticket that we keep plugged in. And it's like every day we come in and check, like, oh, now we got to keep working today. And someone I think is actually combining the NerdMiner UI with the BitAx, which I think is really cool. There's going to be so much collaboration. I'm so bullish on miners, like not these industrial level miners and stuff. Like I'm bullish on individuals that are creating mining infrastructure for the consumer, because right now, unfortunately, as much as I hate to say it, mining is not a pleb thing anymore. But there are people who are desperately trying to make it so that it is a pleb hobby and bring it back to its roots, I think. And I want to do as much as I can to help with that, whatever that may be. I'll do it. I keep telling people buy miners on eBay. That, you know, I've told everyone that my first miners, I bought three S7s, 4 terahash each for $40 on eBay. Two of them were broken. One of them, why would you plug it in? But like, that put me on everything. And eventually, I think that S7 is going to end up being a good investment, because it's going to be 4 terahash that are mine, that no other entity controls. I'm not donating it to anyone. That's 4 terahash of me. Firmware might be a difficulty, but we can get there. Someone will build that out.
Yeah. So now if 5 million people bought these little tiny miners, each of those little tiny miners is viewed as the same as any other miner on the network, right? It secures the network, right?
It's finding blocks. Yeah, it's coming. So one thing that I'm trying to get normalized, and I do a bad job of this myself, considering that my show is called Between Two ASICs, I'm starting to call them ASIC miners, because you're kind of giving a different different idea of what an ASIC is. An ASIC is actually the chip that's on there. So in an S19J Pro, there's 126 ASICs in a single board, and there's three boards. But that one is a single ASIC miner, and it is doing one fraction of, you know, whatever 126 times three. I can't do napkin math right now, but it's doing just as much as one of those ASICs is doing inside of your miner. It is finding blocks, guessing numbers. That's what I hate whenever people say it's solving complex math problems. It's not. It's guessing numbers. So it's guessing numbers just like all the other ASICs are in your regular JPro.
Hmm. Yep. Yeah. The clarification there, Chris, is if you're talking about helping decentralization and securing the network, that's everyone that's running a node, because they're all verifying all of the transactions, whereas your miners are guessing a number, hashing it in SHA-256, and then seeing if it meets the difficulty threshold of leading zeros.
So the node I'm running on my Start 9 right now is I'm running a node. I'm contributing, right?
Good. You're contributing to the decentralization. And even better, if you're running your wallets through that node versus using an untrusted third party.
I'm not there yet, but
we'll get you there.
That first time that you run your mempool on your own node and then you use a wallet through that node and you see that transaction in that mempool instance self-hosted, it's like, I showed it magic to my friend, and I was like, yo, look at this, and I explained it, and he's like, cool, dude. I was like, no, you don't understand. This is the coolest thing I've ever done.
I'm validating this myself.
He's like, okay. So he's getting there. He's close.
In that case, what you're doing is with your own node, if you do a transaction, your node is writing the transaction into a block or something, and you're not – I don't need Coinbase. I do it myself. Is that what it is?
It depends. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Yours. So my setup, I'm able to sign my own transaction, use my node to emit that to the network. And at that point, it'll end up in the mempool. And then at some point, if I assigned high enough transaction fee, it'll be mined into a block. Yeah. So that's running your own node. Mining is different. That's like trying to, what we were just talking about, the miner itself, it's running a SHA-256 algorithm trying to guess the next answer, or not even answer, what you're saying. It's the number of leading zeros against the difficulty adjustment for the next block.
Yeah, and doing things through your node, imagine that you... Anyone go to mempool.space from anywhere on any internet connection. But like a while back, the mempool.space website went down, and I made a joke. I was like, oh my God, we broke Bitcoin. We did it. And like, it was fine, but that site went down. It was still running on my node. I could pull up mempool on my node. And it's also like someone could, in theory, hack mempool.space domain and display whatever they want. Say like they're like, okay, I'm gonna actually pretend like there are no blocks, like I'm making blocks every 5 seconds or whatever, but and it's all false and everything like that. But it's, if it's on my node, it's actually good. My node spent 2 weeks synchronizing, you know, 750,000 blocks. It knows what it's looking for, and it knows what to reject. If it's wrong, it knows what to accept. If it's right, it's shaking hands with all these other connections saying like, okay, you got the same shit? Awesome. You got the same shit? Awesome. All right, let's keep this rolling. And that's just continuously reading and writing because it is running core.
Yeah. The other thing that I'll say, and this is a little bit tinfoil hat, but I think most Bitcoiners have a little bit of tinfoil hat in them, is that, you know, looking at your own addresses on your own node is super beneficial. And again, we'll get a little bit of theoretical. You know, if somebody was on your network and they could see what addresses you were checking, then they would know roughly how much Bitcoin you might have. But if you were checking your own node, that never gets transmitted outside of your network because it downloads the entire network. And so you're checking it there. So you don't have to worry about, you know, somebody sniffing your traffic or if you're at Starbucks or whatever, because you can even connect to your node remotely from outside of your home network. And so that for me, that's a little bit of peace of mind that, you know, no one is snooping on what I'm checking, because all they can see is that I downloaded, you know, every single block since the Genesis block.
One of the coolest things I've ever done, which I did this through Tor, which we can talk about that later on. That's a rabbit hole, but I did it through Tailscale, the mesh VPN. Like on Umbral, I downloaded Tailscale and I set up a mesh VPN, downloaded Tailscale on my computer and on my phone, and I left my network out of range. And I was like, let me see if I can access this. And I accessed my node through a mesh VPN. And I was like, okay, that's a really cool accomplishment that I made. Well, later on, I had to send a Lightning transaction for something. I cannot remember. This was before I even used self-custodial Lightning, anything like that, which I went into self, whatever. But I was like, I was an hour and a half away from where my node was. So I turned on my VPN, accessed my node, sent a transaction from my node through a mesh VPN. It was the coolest, most nerdy thing I've ever done. I was like, this is cool. And no one else thought it was cool. But it was cool.
Wow. Yeah. All right. So you know what I need personally? Cause I bought my Start 9 server and I got the node set up and I can even run a Noster relay, which I set it up, but I'm not using it. But anyway, I need like lessons on all that. But I wanted to ask you guys, I recently, as I start in my business, maybe paying for things with Bitcoin, you know, for instance, let's say I have a subcontractor that's going to do some work for me and they want, you know, 500,000 sats. What's as a normal person, like what's the easiest way for me to get 500 sats and send it to that person? I mean, I know, you know, you can go to Coinbase and get an account and do all that, but is there any way that's easier than that for the normal person, or are we still not that streamlined yet? Or is that a bad question?
No, I think I understand what you're saying, and I'll go first, but I'd love to hear what Tatum and Nick have to say also. For me, the easiest way to do that, well, I'll give you two, is if you have an account on Strike, you can send a Lightning payment via Strike from a fiat balance, you know. And then the other way is if you already have either custodial, non-custodial Lightning wallet, like on a mobile device or running on your node, you can send that transaction from there also. So I think those are two of the easiest ways to do it. But I'd love to hear if there are better ways, because I'm always willing to learn.
I'm sorry, could you clarify the question again, like how to best way to accept? Or
no, I
thought he was saying send.
Yeah, send. Let's say I don't have any Bitcoin at all. All I have is fiat, and I have I'm gonna pay for something, and the person who I'm paying, they said, yeah, give me 500,000 sats. So I gotta pay in sats, but I have no sats. All I have is fiat.
I would say Strike is probably your best bet at this point. I mean, just due to the nature of it. I mean, you're going to be on KYC rails if you're trying to convert from fiat into Bitcoin.
Okay.
I mean, probably if you don't have any Bitcoin, you probably wouldn't have anything like Tether either. I was looking at the Aqua wallet. I don't know if anybody's...
I was just going to bring that up next. It's right here.
Yep. And so this wallet's really interesting. I believe the Lightning is KYC, or not KYC, it's not self-custodial. So you're trusting them with your Lightning funds. But I believe everything else, the Liquid, the USDT, and the on-chain Bitcoin, that's all on you. So it's an interesting wallet. And I think solutions like this actually will be kind of how, because it's, I think their slogan or whatever is a wallet your grandma can use. And I'm like, oh, I could totally hand this to my mom and be like, here you go, mom. Like, write down these 12 words, make sure you keep them somewhere safe. you get a lot of funds, let me know. And, you know, we can help get that on chain into a hardware wallet or whatever. But stuff like that.
Hey, Grandma, I need some sats over here, please.
Yeah.
Like you
but, I mean, if you've got a contractor or something that's interested in sats, that's awesome, man. I mean,
yeah.
I don't have anybody ask me, can you just pay me in Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think that I would go the Strike route also. It's the easiest one to onboard, in my opinion. The best way that I've ever described it is, like, it's Venmo native to Bitcoin. Because, I mean, you could use Strike without even touching Bitcoin. Strike will touch Bitcoin, especially if you're trying to send, you know, internationally or anything like that. But you can do everything you need to do to start out on Strike. In fact, that's how I that's the main way that I buy Bitcoin, either that or Fold. But yeah, Strike is probably the easiest because it's easy to send out of Strike on chain or Lightning. And the fees, even though they introduced tiered fees, still not awful. Like it's probably the best fee rate, in my opinion, of what I've seen to buy Bitcoin. And also, like, if you have a question, ask Jack Mallers on Noster or Twitter, and he will literally respond. Like, I love talking about it. I actually have the tabs pulled up because I was looking for it earlier. But, like, I had a question about a transaction that I didn't see, like, a transaction ID for. And I just posted on Noster asking, like, hey, is this normal? And I didn't even tag Jack or anything like that. And he responded, he's like, yo, what's your username? Let me check that out. I was like, okay. And he was like, oh, yeah. It's in the pool. It's just we batch transactions, and these transactions hadn't gone out yet. Probably could be a better way to visualize that. I'll get with our UX team and see if we can fix that. I was like, okay. Like, cool. The CEO of the company just helped me out and also made a change. Sweet.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I had Strike on my old phone. I got to get it on my new phone. But it is also, you know, one of the things about Noster is, like, people are saying, like, there's always someone that hates a certain app. It could be the best app in the world, and someone's like, oh, this is absolute trash. These people are scam artists. And it's like, really?
Yeah, you're always going to get that drawback no matter what. I found that out. But, I mean, because it's different for everyone. If you're just trying to onboard someone real quick or you're trying to get sats real quick, Strike is a good way to start out. Is that the end goal for you? Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Like I said, with the miner thing, like I bought 3S7s, and next thing I know, I'm now trying to figure out how to get 240 volt power in my apartment for J Pro Plus, which I can't do. But like, I mean, I started out on Coinbase, and now I usually use Strike, but I have used HODL RoboSats. I have KYC FreeStack. I run stuff through my node. Like, some people aren't going to end up doing all that, but, you know, let them introduce them. They got to be introduced somehow. You're not going to introduce them by telling them to go run a node and then I'll show you how to get KYC free, you know, all this stuff. You're not stop. Yeah. You're going to freak them out.
Yeah, that's why I brought up the Aqua wallet, because in my opinion, right now, that's been the easiest wallet I've seen to get somebody onboarded. Fees are low as well to send them. Like, if I wanted to pay them over Lightning, they do a conversion between, Liquid. Yeah. Liquid on chain to open the channel. So it's super cheap. I think it's like less than 500 sats to receive your initial funds. And then after that, it's, I don't know if they're doing anything with, like, channel splicing, but it's super cheap. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So let's, we have about 15 minutes left. There's a bunch of people tuned in. What's up, everybody? Say hi in the chat. Why don't we do a preemptive plugs? Why don't you guys, let's have each of you describe what you're up to and where people can go. Yeah, Tatum.
Hey, I'm about to have to run. So something came up.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. So I'll give my preemptive plug and then I'll jump. I always love hopping on here, but sorry, cool. I had to disturb the peace, but
it's okay.
Buy Bitcoin, subscribe to me on YouTube, and don't get too serious about things, dude. Like, yeah. Hey, there's going to be a lot of people yelling, good and bad. Look, you do you, okay? That's the cool thing about Bitcoin is you don't have to rely on anyone else. You don't have to listen to anyone else. You can do your own thing. Find out what you want to do. Learn from other people, by all means, but you don't ever have to listen to people. You don't ever have to get into all the fights. You don't let people bring you down, dude. Like, enjoy the ride. It's a roller coaster. You're going to go up, and then you're going to go down, and then you're going to go up, and then you're going to go down. But look, as long as you're doing Bitcoin, you're on top already. So that's my plug. Follow me on Twitter, Tatum Turnup, Tatum Turnbull, Nostr, all that shit, you know.
And YouTube channel, too. We'll link to everything in the show notes afterwards. But, yeah, thanks, Tatum. Thanks for dropping in, my brother.
Thanks for having me. Really sorry I had to drop early.
No worries, man. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Stay easy.
Peace. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Terrific. So how about you, Nick? What, you have any plugs?
No, you can find me on Nostr. Nodal and Hodl is my handle. So run a node and Hodl.
See, I pronounce it Noddle and Hoddle. Is that okay or is that heresy?
Either way, however you want to pronounce it, I don't know.
I don't want to get burned at the stake.
As long as you don't say havening. I think we talked about this before. It's the having.
The havening
I'm
does sound cool.
I'm no longer on Shitter. So.
Okay, you're not on Twitter. Okay.
No.
Also, please don't dead name it. It's X now, okay?
It's always going to be Twitter to me.
I'm kidding. Yeah. Everyone says Twitter X, like Twitter X, like, right? Most people. I don't know. Anyway, AC, how about you, my brother?
No plugs for me specifically, but a couple things I want to highlight. Number one, congrats to Copa, Peter McCormack, Hodlnot. We've got it. Court case. Craig Wright is a fraud. He is not Satoshi Nakamoto. So I think that was huge news this week for me. And then I also want to, some people might call this, you know, blasphemy as far as Bitcoiners, but I really like the content that the Quant Bros, Ryan McGinnis and Punter Jeff are putting out on social media as far as their analysis of, you know, a levered Bitcoin opportunity, and that's MicroStrategy. You know, we talked about it earlier, all of the amazing things that Michael Saylor is doing with the company trading dirty fiat to buy more of the superior asset, or as he calls it, the apex asset. Just those two shout outs. Copa, congratulations. Peter McCormack, Hodlnot, I know you guys have gone through a bunch of stuff, so really happy to see that come to a close. And then really the Quant Bros are putting out a lot of great content, so shout out to those guys.
Wow, yeah, that's amazing. That must have what a gargantuan effort, right? To do all that and to this end, right? Finally proving and just now it's all done. And I love how someone said, I think it was either yesterday or the day before, whenever the court case was finally finished, they said, "This is the first annual Craig Wright is not Satoshi Nakamoto Day," or something. It was first annual. I thought that was pretty funny. But Nick, you put your
NPub
in the chat, so that's cool. Yeah, and I want to thanks everybody for tuning in. We're not done yet. We're gonna go about another 10 minutes, but definitely say hi in the chat. I see there's a lot of you watching, and it's okay if you're lurking. It's totally okay. Yeah, and if you have questions, see, when I bring guys like this on here, ask them the hard questions. Come on, let's see if we can stump Nick or stump AC. What is the third line of code in the 2010? But anyway, so yeah. And as far as the price goes, there's really nothing. There's really no price action right now. We're below our all time high, guys. That I don't know what to say.
Stack sats.
Buy the dip.
Oh yeah. Here's a question. When moon, AC, come on, man.
You know me, man. I don't like to talk about price. I'll talk about direction, but not magnitude. Sometime in the future. You know, there's so many variables into that equation. I'm highly confident that we're going to be higher down the road than we are today. But when exactly that is, you know, I have no idea.
That's right.
Right.
Well, that's the beauty of
this point. Like, if you're stacking sats, make sure you consolidate your UTXOs.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, or stack.
Fees, Yeah, and when they're below, I don't know where they're at right now, but if it's below like 30 sats per V-byte and you've got a bunch of UTXOs, consolidate them. I manage mine. I use Sparrow Wallet so that I can label everything so I know what exchange. And I do have my KYC and non-KYC stack as well. Nice. Those are two separate wallets.
Yeah, I just checked mempool on my node. Like we talked about earlier, it's showing low priority at 32 and then up from there. So yeah, 100%. And then another option would be if you're stacking sats or DCAing, consider using Lightning as well. And then once you get to a significant amount, a lot of people will tell you that's 1 million or more sats. Then you can push that out on the base layer. You've got a good clean UTXO for the future, whether that's you know, forward privacy looking or in the anticipation of higher transaction fees in the future.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up, because as we move into this cycle, and if you've got a lot of like transactions under probably a million sats is kind of where I'm at with it too. It's going to be very expensive to move that if you need to. So my take is consolidate now.
So how do I know how many UTXOs I have? Like, I mean, I did, by the way, I just transferred a bunch. Mm-hmm. I changed wallets. Now I'm using a Cold Card Mark IV. And so I pretty much sent everything there. And I sent it in three transactions, meaning in my Sparrow wallet that's connected to my Cold Card, I see three incoming amounts. Is that three UTXOs?
Maybe, maybe not. Nick, correct me if I'm wrong because I'm going off the top of my head, but there should be a tab, a UTXO tab in Sparrow, and you can see each of the UTXOs there. I think it's like the third or fourth one down on the left side. And so you can see each UTXO, the transaction that it came in, the amount, and that'll tell you how many UTXOs and the amount that you have within a particular address.
You know, one way to find out how many UTXOs you have is to subscribe to this channel. If you click the subscribe button, there's a little pop-up.
Well
played. I'm kidding.
Well played.
But please, subscribe and follow on Rumble as well. I think I did click the UTXO tab in the Sparrow wallet, and I thought it was it showed three. So
probably if you moved, so if you went from wallet A and you went over to wallet B and say you had 10 UTXOs on A and you sent three transactions over to B, you'd end up with three UTXOs.
Right. And if I was in Coinbase and I made three purchases and then I sent all of those three purchases in one shot to my wallet, that would be one UTXO.
So that's the other thing I've been doing is I've kind, depending on the exchange, whether they do Lightning or not, I prefer River and Strike because they're both Lightning enabled. But yeah, I am kind of waiting till I get above. Yeah, it's right about a million sats or more. And then that's when I send it to an on-chain address that I control.
Yeah. Yeah, there is so much to learn. That's why I'm always learning and I always want to learn more and I encourage others to learn. I mean, every day I make these little news videos and it, you know, I put little nuggets in there, right? And I thought it was snowing again. Oh my God. But yeah, anyway, it's always good to learn. And that's why like on future panels, BTC Moon Guy, thanks, man. Appreciate that. And on future panels, I was just thinking, and tell me what you guys think of this. Not only Nick and AC, but everyone watching. Would it be good and useful to devote the whole hour of the Bitcoin panel to like one topic or something and maybe make it sort of more educational instead of news and chatting or something? I'm just thinking.
You know, I think that there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of content floating around out there, and the more that we can contribute to that body of knowledge, I think is worthwhile. And I think this is one of those topics that definitely needs more people talking about it, and that's UTXO management. You know, a lot of people are stacking on the daily, right? Whether that's, you know, $5 a day or $500 a day. for the people that are on the lower end of that, you know, if they're not managing those UTXOs and they're stacking on the base layer, you know, they're going to be destroyed by fees. You know, if they've got a bunch of, let's call them $5 UTXOs now, but then they need to consolidate 20 of them to make a purchase, you know, down the road, those fees are going to really surprise them. And it's going to be painful, because the way that the fee structure works within Bitcoin is it's not based on the base layer. It's not based on the amount that you're sending. It's based on the complexity of the transaction and how many UTXOs are being combined, how many UTXOs are inputs into the transaction. And so the more UTXOs you're consolidating, the more expensive it's going to be. And unfortunately, a lot of, you know, people who are early on their Bitcoin journey don't understand that yet. And so I think any content that talks about this particular topic, it should be fair game and free game for us and everyone else to talk about.
Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, it's like 50,000 sats. I know I had some UTXOs. This is about a year ago, right before we saw all the ordinal stuff. And I was like, man, effectively those are dust transactions at this point. Like, I'm going to spend almost just as much, you know, in fees as I would to consolidate that. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah.
I like the idea of maybe coming up with a specific topic. I'm not opposed to it. Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking was coming up with a course for beginners. You know, just an introductory course to Bitcoin. Like, literally people who know nothing, like my mom. Something good for my mom that just, like, literally breaks everything down. And I know people, there probably are courses like that already, right? I'm sure there's a lot.
Anybody bought the domain Bitcoin for Moms yet?
I don't know. Well, someone just did. Right? That's so cool.
Yeah, Chris, the other thing that we talked about after the show last week is, and I think this is a cool idea too, is bringing on like a no-coiner or a pre-coiner. And, you know, what questions do they have that maybe the panel can address or discuss? Because the reality is, at least the way I see things, and, you know, my vision's kind of messed up anyways, but if a pre-coiner or a no-coiner has a particular question, the majority of them probably have the same or similar question too. And so I think, you know, if we can help that one person live on the show, it's probably going to help others down the road.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I should, and the other thing that we could do, and I don't know, man. I always think like years in advance. I think coming up with my own little fractal miner. Oh yeah, baby. But it's hard to make these things though, right? You can't just, could you make this at home by yourself? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, yeah, another bad idea. I am the king of bad ideas. You will come to know this. But yeah, we're pretty much out of time. So look, thank you guys so much for hanging out on the Bitcoin panel. Everyone who's watching, please subscribe and like and all that stuff. I'm really trying to grow the channel and everything. So if you can share my daily videos or the panel, or if you have ideas, let me know. And if you just want to say hi, I think, especially on YouTube, a lot of cool people are on YouTube and they're being very supportive to me. And I really appreciate that so much. So thanks everybody. So thanks, Nick and AC. Great job, man.
Absolutely. Glad to be
here. All right. So we'll see y'all next week, but I'll have a video Monday. But all right, we'll end it here. Don't forget to subscribe and like and all that, and we'll see you next time. All right, bye.